When we last left Rav Baruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, in the previous installment, he was a lad of 18 years old and had just become engaged to Rivka, the daughter of Rav Avrom, the Gertner, and he had made up with his future shver that it would take a year time until the actual marriage would take place. Meanwhile, during that time, Baruch remained in the city of his birth in Vitebsk, and he studied assiduously throughout that time under the guidance of his brother-in-law, one of the Rosh Yeshivas of the Vitebsk Yeshiva, Rav Yosef Yitzchok. Baruch also reserved several hours daily for manual labor in order to earn his livelihood, and felt that his was an ideal, harmonious existence. Pesach drew near, and Baruch was preparing to leave Vitebsk, although his relatives were pressing him that he should stay with them for Pesach. And Baruch had, however, other plans. As he would shortly be getting married, he wanted to take the opportunity of visiting some of his old friends before he settled down. He particularly wanted to meet again someone who made a very deep impression upon him when, as a boy, he had lived in Yanovich. This was his old friend Zalman Chaim, who was the shamus of the big Beis HaMedrash in the marketplace. When Baruch first came to Yanovich, he went to a small Beis HaMedrash, which was situated near a cemetery, and settled himself there to study. Whenever there was a Levaya Nishtogadacht, the funeral, the mourners invariably came into this Beis HaMedrash to the Mincha service. The grave diggers kept their tools in a room in this Beis HaMedrash. The hearse and the Tara board, the purification board, were also kept there. Because of this, few people cared to remain alone in the Beis HaMedrash in the evenings. They weren't particularly anxious to stay there during the day either. For this reason, Baruch found it an ideal place for study, for nobody disturbed him there. It must be admitted that Baruch also felt rather nervous at the beginning, especially as he also slept in the Beis HaMedrash. Gradually, though, he got used to the place and did not feel afraid anymore. The majority of the worshippers were from the surrounding neighborhood, all simple, hard-working people who snatched a few minutes to hurry into the Beis HaMedrash to daven mincha and dash off again to their work. A few people used to come in between mincha and ma'ariv to listen to the shir on Mishnayos or in Yankov. But after ma'ariv, not a soul remained. The shamash of this Beis HaMedrash was also one of the grave diggers. For this reason, as well as because the cemetery was so near, the grave diggers used to gather together at the Beis HaMedrash, umach freilich, they would make merry. Whenever there was a funeral, these grave diggers used to make it an opportunity for having a drinking bout. On one such occasion, one of them, a good deal the worse for drink, lurched towards Baruch and threw his arms around him in a drunken embrace. Baruch was horrified and badly shaken. It took him quite a while to recover, and he determined to leave this Beis HaMedrash to avoid a possible repetition of such disgusting behavior. This was when Baruch moved to a large Beis HaMedrash in the marketplace, where Zalman Chaim was the shamus. Baruch had every opportunity of observing Zalman Chaim and of admiring him for his exceptionally fine qualities. It was actually through the influence of Zalman Chaim that this Beis HaMedrash was built. The money for the building was donated by the well-known benefactor of Yanovich, Baer. Baer was a cattle dealer who had the good fortune to make a little gold mine out of his cattle dealing. This in itself would not have brought him fame had he not at the same time been a God-fearing and extremely charitable man. Bear was very hospitable. His house had an open door, particularly for Talmidei Chachamim. He always used to say to them, "The masters of the house must give money, the visitor must give his blessing, and the Almighty must grant both success." Bear had no children, and this grieved him greatly. One of Bear's regular visitors was Zalman Chaim, whom Bear respected very much indeed. And thus, when Zalman Chaim urged him to finance the building of the Beis HaMedrash in the marketplace, Bear agreed. When the Beis HaMedrash was ready, Zalman Chaim became Shamus there. Nobody quite knew how he came to be Shamus, nor where he had come from. But it was soon obvious why he had wanted the Beis HaMedrash in the middle of the marketplace, and why he wanted to be Shamus there. It was wonderfully convenient for so many people. All the Jewish merchants, stallholders, and villagers who came to the market could so easily slip into the new Beis HaMedrash to daven without wasting any time. And so it was that the Beis HaMedrash was full from early morning to late at night. This Beis HaMedrash, being such a busy place, would hardly seem the most suitable for settling down to study. But Zalman Chaim saw to it that there should be special rooms reserved for those who wished to study undisturbed. Baruch availed himself of the privacy of one of these rooms and settled down to his learning, finding time also to observe the many virtues of the Shamus Zalman Chaim. Baruch noticed that many of the worshippers were people whom Zalman Chaim brought in himself. In the main, these were ordinary working Jews and villagers, whom Zalman Chaim would welcome and encouraged by having them called up to the Torah on the days when the Torah was read. This was very much appreciated by these simple people, who were generally ignorant on account of their lack of education. They felt the honor done them, and they came the more eagerly to the Beis HaMedrash. They were particularly grateful to Zalman Chaim because he practically brought the Beis HaMedrash to them and made them feel that the Beis HaMedrash belonged to them. It was Zalman Chaim's custom to go out into the street and gather around him Jewish men, women, and children, and tell them tales from the Gemara and the Medrash. He told the stories simply and so beautifully that everybody, both young and old, understood him perfectly and enjoyed every word. Zalman Chaim told them mostly about the great Tanoim and Amoraim, who also worked, like his listeners, as cobblers, smiths, joiners, etc. He wanted to prove to them that even workers could become great scholars, and great scholars are no less great if they do manual labor for their living. During these talks, which were really long lectures held in the open and given in the simple language these people were used to, Zalman Chaim would urge the market traders to be honest in their dealings with everybody. He also tried to instill in them a feeling of Avos Yisrael, of brotherly love, so that they should not quarrel or have arguments with each other during their business transactions. And of course, Zalman Chaim would deal at great length with the importance of seeing that their children receive the necessary Jewish education and be brought up as Torah-loving Jews and Jewesses. These talks of the Shamus Zalman Chaim made a tremendous impression on his listeners, and they flocked into the Beis HaMedrash to listen to the shiurim he gave there, as well as to daven there. One of the shiurim Zalman Chaim gave in the Beis HaMedrash was on Chumash and Rashi, which he translated into Yiddish and explained in simple terms so that each and every one understood him. Zalman Chaim's concern, however, was not only for the spiritual needs of these people who he had taken under his wing. He was interested in their material welfare as well. For himself, he cared little, satisfied, as it were, with a piece of dry bread. But for others, he would spare no effort to see that they would lack nothing. Zalman Chaim had introduced an innovation in this new Beis HaMedrash. Like other Shamosim, he used to make a collection among the Mispalim, among the worshippers, on Monday and Thursday after Kriyas HaTorah, after the Torah was read. But unlike all other Shamosim, he did not take the money for himself, but instead got together a goodly stum and established a Gemilas Chasodim, a loan fund for the benefit of any poor worker or trader in need of financial assistance. Zalman Chaim would become especially busy just before market days and ran around looking for customers who were in need of ready cash. When, as often happened, Zalman Chaim found he had more customers than cash, he would go to the Gevirim of Yanovich, to the wealthier individuals of the city, and got them to advance the money he needed to lend to the poor people who had learned to look to Zalman Chaim in their difficulties and depend upon him. Sometimes it was a merchant wishing to buy a load of grain, sometimes a butcher desiring to purchase a calf, or a poor woman wanting to procure a chicken or a basket of eggs. Zalman Chaim's Gemilas Chasodim, his loan fund, was available for them all as long as the money lasted. Whenever he gave them the cash, he always said to them, "Here's wishing you success. You can be sure of it as long as you deal honestly. As for the money, don't worry about repaying it in a hurry. Whenever you can spare it will be time enough to settle the debt." Everyone knew what a good soul Zalman Chaim was, and he was greatly loved and respected by all. In addition to his concern for needy traders, he used to take time off on market days to have a word with the Jewish villagers and peasants who came to town. These he would ask very kindly and with real interest about their families and about their affairs, the education of their children, and if he could advise or help them in any way. In this way, Zalman Chaim acquired an immense influence over these Jewish villagers and peasants who looked up to him as to a father. Thanks to his interest and efforts, Yiddishkeit flourished where before it had but struggled for existence. He even managed to have shuls established in remote places where before the Jewish inhabitants could only attend a minyan on the high holy days for which they and their families came into town. One of the Jewish villagers, with whom Zalman Chaim had become friendly, and over whom he had a great deal of influence, was Mordechai the Miller. This Miller was a very rich, good-hearted, though unlearned Jew. Zalman Chaim had talked to Mordechai a good deal, and Mordechai had in consequence become very enthusiastic to do something for Yiddishkeit and his fellow Jews. Zalman Chaim prevailed upon Mordechai to finance the building of a Beis HaMedrash in Mordechai's village, which could be a place of prayer and a spiritual center for all the settlements in the neighborhood. This Mordechai gladly did, and the scheme proved a great success and was very much appreciated by all the Jews around. Mordechai the Miller had three daughters, two of them about to be married through the friendly intervention of Zalman Chaim, to two learned young men. The first son-in-law, Avram Shloime, the son of the Rav of Dubrovna, soon introduced various shiurim into his father-in-law's Beis HaMedrash, and thus the village Beis HaMedrash became not only a house of prayer, but also a house of Torah study, a Torah center. When Avram Shloime later became Rav of an important Jewish congregation elsewhere, the task of continuing the shiurim at the Beis HaMedrash fell to the second son-in-law, Zalman Leib, the son of the Rav of Borisov. This Zalman Leib, though a learned student of the Torah, was, sad to say, quite conceited and full of his own importance. He told his father-in-law that he preferred to keep to himself and did not wish to teach the villagers or have anything to do with them because they were uneducated people. This grieved the miller very much, as the villagers had already become used to the regular shiurim at the Beis HaMedrash, and would be terribly upset if they would be discontinued. So Mordechai called a meeting, and it was decided to appoint a learned rav over their little congregation, Mordechai taking upon himself to pay a third of the salary, and the others together to pay the remaining two-thirds. A delegation was sent to Yanovich, and on the recommendation of the local Rav, a certain Rabbi Ber was chosen to be their spiritual guide and teacher. This Rabbi Ber was a very learned man of about 60 years of age. He had an interesting history. He had been living at the home of his father-in-law, a citizen of Yanovich, for many years, devoting his time to Torah study. He was a very good teacher and managed to make quite a lumpen out of his father-in-law. When his father-in-law passed away, and with his passing went his source of income, Rabbi Ber became a melamed, a teacher of young students. He was soon acclaimed in Yanovich as a very learned man and a very capable teacher. Thus he carried on for many years until he became an alman, he became a widower. Then he gave up his teaching and returned to the constant study of the Torah, his children being in the position to support him. Rabbi Ber was rather fond of solitude and was not a talker. He never spoke more than he needed. When the delegation came to the Rav of Yanovich for his advice as to whom they should choose as Rav for their village Beis HaMedrash, he could think of none more suitable than Rabbi Ber, who if anything might be considered too great a scholar for these simple Jewish villagers and settlers. He felt, though, that Rabbi Ber, for his part, would welcome such an appointment, as it would give him an opportunity to live among quiet country people instead of the busier, noisier town, and he would be able to indulge in solitude to his heart's content. When Rabbi Ber arrived in the village just before Sliches, Mordechai invited him to live at his house, Rabbi Ber having no wife to look after him. Mordechai and his wife showed him their usual hospitality, and he would have been very comfortable there had it not been for Mordechai's second son-in-law, Zalman Leib. The latter immediately recognized that Rabbi Ber was a great scholar and resented his presence in consequence, particularly when he saw the great respect shown Rabbi Ber by his father-in-law and all the villagers. Rabbi Ber soon earned the affection as well as respect of the villagers by taking the trouble of giving them shiurim in a way they could grasp and speaking to them in a manner that they could understand. The effect was to stir them all to a determination to be better and worthier Jews and Jewesses. Zalman Leib could not bear to see the ever-increasing popularity of Rabbi Ber and took every opportunity of showing his dislike for him. He did not even stop at insulting him in public, but Rabbi Ber accepted it with toleration and did not attempt to retaliate. In fact, he answered Zalman Leib gently, and had the latter more decency in him, this in itself would have made him realize how mean was his own attitude. But no, he could not bear the thought that they had to live under the same roof. He would not associate with the villagers because he considered them beneath him, and yet he hated Rabbi Ber because he was his greater scholar than himself. He was so conceited that he wanted to be the top man everywhere and always. Mordechai was terribly unhappy about the bad manners of his son-in-law and apologized to Rabbi Ber for his inexcusable behavior. But all Rabbi Ber said was, "Don't be upset about it, Mordechai. After all, Zalman Leib is a clever student and he is yet young. His conduct will improve with the years." Eventually, Rabbi Ber decided it would be better if he left Mordechai's house and moved to the house of an old tailor named Yossi. This old Yossi was well in the 70s, but still continued with his tailoring. Yossi was famed for his honesty. He carried on his tailoring practice almost to the last day of his life. When Yossi felt he was about to die, he called three of his friends to his bedside and handed into their care the little money he had managed to earn during his lifetime. He also showed them where they would find the tachrichim, the burial shrouds, which he had sewn for himself and his wife. "The money should pay for our burial," he said. "I shouldn't like to think that others would need to have any expenditure on our account. As for a hearse, make it out of this table. Let it bear witness to the fact that I have never used shotness for any garment, nor have I overcharged any customer or failed to return any material left over in making garments." Such was the man with whom Rabbi Berra had chosen to take up residence, and where he hoped to find some peace. Zalman Leib, however, still managed to find sufficient opportunities to continue with his persecutions of the suffering Rabbi Berra, calling him an old ignoramus, or else the preacher of the ignoramuses. In addition to Yossi the tailor, there was another outstanding villager called Shlomo the Orphan. He was called the Orphan, though he was well over 100 years of age. No one knew his exact age, but Yossi, who was over 70 years old himself, said that when he was a boy, Shlomo was already a man of about 40. Shlomo had been nicknamed the Orphan because he lost both his parents when he was only 3 years old. His uncle was a butcher, took him and brought him up, and when he was 9 years of age, he took him into his butcher shop. At the time, there was less than a million of Jews in the village, and they knew very little of Judaism. As for Shlomo, he had no education at all, and grew up to be an absolute ignoramus. He even missed the opportunity that other Jewish village children had. This was when they were taken into town with their parents to celebrate the Yom Neroim. Then, at least, they saw how Jews lived a Jewish life. They attended shul, they heard the Rav speak. With poor Shlomo, however, it was otherwise. His uncle and family used to join the other Jewish families in their trek to the nearby towns for the high festivals, but always left Shlomo behind to look after the house and the animals. Yet, although Shlomo grew up to be so ignorant, he nevertheless had an urge to be frum. He never during his lifetime managed to learn to daven, but still he did learn to recite a few brochas, as well as Midah Ani and the Shema. As he only knew the brochas for bread and water, these were the only items of nourishment he would allow himself. Later, when Mordechai established the Beis HaMedrash in the village, Shlomo used to be among the first to come to the morning davening, and although he could not daven, he used to put on a talis and tefillin and listen to the others. At appropriate moments, he would respond amen, and this gave him immense spiritual satisfaction. He likewise attended the mincha and ma'ariv davening. Yossi the tailor was also far from being educated, but he at least knew all the davening and tehillim by heart and could read Hebrew. He was a very hospitable man and had the great and uncommon virtue of never saying a wrong word about anyone. He was in fact a man of few words, feeling that in this way he was less likely to say anything he shouldn't. Because of the righteousness and sincerity of these two old Jews, Rabbi Berra used to spend a great deal of time with them and try to teach them what he considered they could grasp. That is why Zalman Leib poked fun at Rabbi Berra and tried to show that Rabbi Berra was as ignorant as these two old simple men with whom he associated. Once Zalman Leib found an excellent opportunity to try to make trouble for Rabbi Berra. It so happened that there was a shaila on an animal. After extensive investigation, Rabbi Berra decided that it was kosher. Zalman Leib told the butcher that according to his view, however, the animal was treifa. This put the butcher in a dilemma, and when the other Jewish villagers heard what had happened, they too were terribly confused and worried. Whom should they believe? They knew that both were real Torah scholars, and they themselves knew too little to judge in such a matter. They were just scared lest, God forbid, they should be eating treifa. Rabbi Berra was upset at the turn of events and tried to explain to Zalman Leib the reason for his believing the animal was kosher, but Zalman Leib only replied with insults. Rabbi Berra then wrote out the whole matter in great detail in a letter to the Rav of Yanovich, and before sending it off showed it to Zalman Leib. Zalman Leib, however, just threw the letter angrily to the floor, saying he refused to look at such nonsense. A few days later, Rabbi Berra received an answer from the Rav of Yanovich saying that Rabbi Bear's decision in the matter had been absolutely correct. The villagers were all delighted, but Zalman Leib refused even now to admit himself in the wrong. Rabbi Berra might still have had to suffer persecution at the hands of Zalman Leib, but fortunately, Mordechai the Miller moved to Yanovich and, of course, took his son-in-law with him. At long last, Rabbi Ber could really enjoy his stay in the village. Mordechai had bought a house and shop in the marketplace in Yanovich, right next to the Beis HaMedrash, where Zalman Chaim was Shamas. Mordechai became a regular worshiper of the Beis HaMedrash and used to listen eagerly to the shiurim which Zalman Chaim held there. In a short while, Mordechai became the Gabbai of the Beis HaMedrash and helped Zalman Chaim in all his activities. His son-in-law, Zalman Leib, also attended davening at this Beis HaMedrash and felt very much at home here, where he found a number of Torah scholars with whom he could discuss and debate and show off his Torah knowledge. Zalman Chaim B'Shamish felt an attachment towards Zalman Leib because he had been instrumental in bringing about the shidduch between him and Mordechai's daughter. And so it was Zalman Chaim who arranged that Zalman Leib should give a Gemara Shir, a Talmud lesson, at the Beis HaMedrash. Zalman Leib was delighted, and so was his father-in-law, for all Yanovich talked about it. Soon Zalman Leib realized that while but a handful of students came to listen to his Shir, an audience of anywhere up to 100 or so attended Zalman Chaim's shir. This made Zalman Leib terribly jealous of the Shamas, and he began to annoy and persecute him too. Zalman Chaim had no idea what could be the reason for this hatred. He even discussed the matter with Mordechai. It was not so much the fact that Zalman Leib's venom was directed against himself that troubled him, but that he should be capable of such a vice at all. Zalman Chaim felt rather guilty towards Mordechai for having inflicted such a son-in-law upon him, and for this reason too, he felt it to be his responsibility to try and improve Zalman Leib's character. Despite Zalman Leib's obvious animosity towards him, Zalman Chaim always treated Zalman Leib with the greatest respect, and whenever Zalman Leib gave a shir, he took every opportunity of telling his students that they should also attend the shir that Zalman Leib gave. At the same time, he told them that Zalman Leib was a great scholar, and they would be able to learn much from him. When Zalman Leib heard what Zalman Chaim had been saying about him, all these wonderful things, despite all that Zalman Leib had said about Zalman Chaim, and when he noticed that Zalman Chaim continued to show respect and even affection towards him, he opened his eyes in wonderment. What type of person was this who could continue to repay good for evil? He observed this strange Shamas more closely and could not help but admire his wonderful nature. It made him also realize at last how despicably he himself had been behaving. He determined to change his ways, for it was indeed high time that he not only learned the Torah, but also practiced its preachings. So finally, Zalman Chaim's influence brought about the desired result, and a real and lasting friendship sprang up between these two Zalmans. And it was to this very special Shamas, Rabbi Zalman Chaim, who had such an influence on all those around him, that young Baruch went after Pesach to visit before his marriage. What happened with Baruch during his visit and the terrible dilemma he was placed in because of circumstances and because of two personalities that he saw in Yanovich, Emir Tzashem, in the next installation of how Rav Baruch became a chosid of the Baal Shem Tov.